Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and I want to remind you that the Urbanite Radio stories, which you'll hear today on The Mark Steiner Show, are made possible by Marin Alsop and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, presenting its 2009-2010 season featuring Kathleen Battle, Andre Watts, Yitzhak Perlman, and more. Tickets to the Meyerhof are available at 410-783-8000 or bsmusic.org. And as I said, we are doing one of our Urbanite radio stories today. It comes out of this issue of the Urbanite, the September issue, which is its education issue. There was an article written called Testing in Progress by Sarah Neufeld. And we have our three guests here, two of them from the article directly. And all three of them have been on the show before, but never together at one time, I think. We have with us in the studio Matthew Hornback. Matt Hornback is president of the Hampstead Hill Academy.
Principal.
Principal, what did I say?
I think president.
Did I say president? Well, you can be president if you like, Matt.
Okay.
Kalila Harris is with us, who's executive director of the Baltimore Freedom Academy Foundation and founder of the Baltimore Freedom Academy. Good to have you back, Kalila.
Thank you.
And Linda Prostein's with us, who was here to talk about her book, which was Tested, One American School Struggles to Make the Grade, about schools in Anne Arundel County, two of them. She's now public editor for the Education Writers Association. Linda, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com or jump on to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page and enter the debate there. We'll read your comments on the air about testing and how our kids are tested. What role does testing play in our schools? What does accountability really mean? And it was a very interesting article built around No Child Left Behind and more that we're going to wrestle with for this first part of our program. And in the beginning of the article, there was a quote from you, Matt Hornbeck, about testings, and where your school had to change the way it taught because of the tests, the school assessments coming up, Maryland School Assessments, and you saw your math scores soar among your sixth graders, but few in the third had passed that the year before. And your quote was, "I don't think it's sound math, but that's a larger statewide issue." Now, that to me is a profound statement in a sentence when we're talking about accountability in our children and saying, even though our kids pass the statewide test, it would, in the words of my grandfather in Yiddish, mean bupkis, which means nothing. So tell me what that means to you.
Well, in Maryland, as in most states in the United States, we have to cover many, many skills in math over the course of a year. And basically it's a mile wide and an inch deep. And that's unlike some of the higher performing countries in the world, and countries such as Singapore, which does much, much better than the United States on internationally benchmarked math assessments, does so well because they cover far fewer topics, but cover them deeply, so students are at mastery. And I'm very hopeful that these new Common Core standards that many states are looking at adopting will lead to, at least in math, and very quickly, I hope, nationwide assessment and some nationwide standards that the assessment looks to. And we need to get back on track in the United States with math instruction. We are implementing something, we're piloting something this year at Hampstead Hill. The Singapore math program is something that, because they speak English in Singapore, can be directly and easily adapted here in the U.S. So we're trying that. But the state and more importantly, the state's assessment needs to change in order for us to be competitive with kids from other countries.
When we first met, Linda Perlstein, to talk about your book, Tested, When American School Struggles to Make the Grade, you talked about a school in Annapolis, if I remember correctly, and another school that was in Anne Arundel County, in Crofton. They're mm-hmm. both in Anne Arundel County. One school was mostly white, or mostly middle class, upper middle class from Crofton, and the other was mostly African American and poor working class in Annapolis. And the school achieved well on the test. But talk about your perspective on this between those two schools.
Well,
and what
when
this
you
says to you now.
You know, you bring up bupkis. It's not that the tests don't tell us, that they tell us nothing. It's that they don't tell us everything. And yet we've built an entire system around the notion that we do. So that they do. So the students at Matt School may have increased their proficiency percentage on the MSA, which is Maryland State Test. But anyone inside that building knows that that doesn't exactly tell us how much better they've gotten at all of the Maryland standards in mathematics. Reading is an even stronger example because not everything that's supposed to be taught in third grade in Maryland is on the test. And so what you have is some schools that may have similar percentages of kids passing.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, if you looked at the instruction going on in the building, it looks very different. And just because you have 90% of your kids passing the MSA in reading doesn't mean that they're learning as much as a school, you know, across the county that has the same passing percentage. They may be able to write a paragraph telling you, I know this is a poem because it has rhyme stanzas and rhythm, but they may never have gotten the chance to ever write a poem.
Kalila, welcome. Good to have you back.
Thank you. Well, you know, standardized tests, I think, do tell us only what we're looking to be told.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, you can take the data and you can say, well, this group of kids do well on this test, or this group of kids do well in college. And I don't think that the standardized tests are going to really be able to tell us that information. So it can tell us that a group of kids had some progress, but it doesn't really tell us whether or not they're meeting standards, if they are able to apply the information that they've known. It really doesn't give us a sense of their performance ability to apply what they might have, for all intents and purposes, memorized for that school year. And when you have a mass of teachers who are teaching two tests or becoming professional skill builders,
mm-hmm.
In terms of test-taking skills, not necessarily the content, then it's very difficult for that information to tell us whether or not students are going to be able to be successful in college. At Baltimore Freedom Academy, we are grades 6 through 12, and so we have students who we are directly connecting to college. And we've had students go to college and have to do remedial work who did fine on their HSAs.
That says a great deal.
It says a great deal. And
likewise, talk to me about what it says to you.
Well, let me give you an example. Our first graduating class of 2007, we had two students who were coming to our school. This applied to several students, but two in particular I can think of could not pass the Maryland functional test that was given back in 2002, 2001. Could not pass it. So the district was not going to promote them to the ninth grade.
Mm-hmm.
We took them into the ninth grade anyway. We do an extended school year for ninth grade. We pulled them and a few other students in. Both of those students graduated from high school. One is a sophomore here at Morgan State in electrical engineering. Another is a sophomore at the College of Notre Dame. You know, those tests were saying that those students didn't know math, but we have an engineering student and a pre-med student in college. So what we did when they came to us was work through with them their ability to do critical thinking, problem solving, analytical reasoning, what they would need when they got to college or into the real world to be able to be successful. So they didn't memorize some points of information when they were younger. Okay, you know, are the tests really supposed to be telling us what they memorize or what they're able to apply?
I think Kalila's right that we're overemphasizing the importance of the tests. I mean, they're being used as gatekeepers for opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You go later.
No, I just think I'm sure Kalila and Matt would both agree, one of the problems with these tests is, as Kalila said, they don't give good information to a school about what a child knows and doesn't know and how a teacher can improve her teaching.
Exactly.
And Maryland is worse than other states on this, actually, because it's one of the most secretive states for testing. Some other states actually release their tests so you can actually see how your students did on various questions. On the Maryland reading test, you can see what score your child got on – a student got on comprehension of literary text, comprehension of informational text, and general reading processes. As a teacher, you have no idea how they did on main idea, vocabulary words, multiple meaning words.
Well, and does that data come out? In July.
And it comes out months after the
and
test.
And the data is also not based on an adaptive test, just like the article says. So it's not adapting to skill set. So you give a child who's below 6th, 7th, 8th grade reading level a 6th, 7th, 8th grade test, and you don't really know what they do and don't know, because they're not hitting certain points on that test. It's not adapting to their ability. Likewise, you don't know if a kid is performing well above grade level.
Mark, we're on exactly the same page, because we're not against testing at Hampstead Hill. We would want more testing, better testing, testing that measures
more
growth.
Or better.
Both. I mean, we teachers need useful information, and we want to be measured on growth, not a static model. And we've adopted something called the Measures of Academic Progress, which is used by schools around the country, and is an adaptive test, like Kalila just mentioned, where if one question is answered correctly, the next question's harder, and if one question is answered incorrectly, the next question's easier. And then we do it in October and May, and then we can see the value that we added in a narrow sense, but it is better than the MSA. We can see the value that we added over the course of a year.
I just want to open the phones here, 410-319-8888, and our guest will be with us for at least another half an hour, so I want you to join us now as soon as you can, because I want to get your calls in, thinking about the test you've taken as a student, if you're a student now, as a parent with children in public school especially, or private school, because I'm about to raise an issue about private schools and public schools, and you think what you think the value of testing is and how that affects your education or the education of your children. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to Mark Steiner on Facebook and throw your ideas there in the debate that takes place there every day. 410-319-8888. With Urbanite Radio Stories, we're taking an article out of the Urbanite today to talk about it, testing in progress, with Matthew Hornbeck, Linda Perlstein, and Kalila Harris. One of our guests wrote a book about it, and two of our guests run schools here in Baltimore City.
Mark,
if
I can jump in just a sec, you know, when you ask whether or not more or better testing is relevant, I sort of cringe at the concept of testing. We really should be assessing where students are and modifying what we do as educators to support them learning. There's no use of a test that sits in a grid or an Excel spreadsheet somewhere. We need to have assessment for learning, not just multiple tests that students sit and take, because it drives them crazy. It drives faculty crazy. People think their jobs are on the line if they don't have enough kids pass this HSA or this MSA. Instead, students should be assessed often, but I don't think they should be put in this situation where there's just testing for testing's sake, so someone can say, well, we've passed some federal law standard.
It seems to me that we've gotten to a place in this country that's become a testing fever, an accountability fever. And I know you said earlier, we're in the green room, Matthew, that you think accountability is important, and accountability is important.
Absolutely.
Because we're accountable for things all of our lives. However, it seems to me that what we're talking about here really is the fact that schools have changed and school populations have changed in the last 45 years in this country. So now we have kids, as we were talking about, who were special education were sloughed off. They were not even considered part of a school. But now they are. And we're talking about children whose families for generations never went to school. Because in Baltimore City, you had one black high school, which was Douglas Senior High School. That means that all the other thousands of black kids in the city in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s didn't go to high school because there was no high school to go to except Douglas, which only took X amount of students, and there were many more than X in the black community. So you have kids who were not prepared educationally in schools. Schools are failing. Kids are failing, going to college, not being prepared, going to job training programs, not being prepared. So we have this mad crisis because we don't know what to do. So our response was to test, to throw money into testing. It's my instant analysis of why we're in this testing crisis. So the question is, what do we do? How do you create an accountability that actually has to do with learning and doesn't have to do with just a bunch of people crunching numbers about what our kids know and don't know?
Well, you need teams of people who go into schools who actually know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to see rigor, if you're going to see something in other than subjects other than reading or math, or if you're going to see if there's good physical education in a school, a couple of things. I'm sure Linda has other ideas. The British inspectorate model, where they send a team of people in every 3 years. The private school accreditation model. I mean, depends on the quality of the people coming in to see what is going on, and then the feedback that's given. But You need somebody who knows what they're looking at rather than a bubble-in test.
I'd also say that the bridge program that they use to move students from not passing HSA to being able to get their Maryland diploma is probably a lot more practical. But again, it requires people who know what they're looking at and not these random standards of evaluation for the bridge projects. But bridge projects required students to apply what they knew, to do application of the work, take the material and information and reflect it back, explain it in a tangible way for whoever was reviewing the project, as opposed to bubbling a test. So you had someone looking at, does a student know how to do an experiment? Does a student know how to compare and contrast different information about historical events? So that's probably a lot more practical, but even that needs to be more fine-tuned, because I think you'd find that there was subjective grading from school to school, depending on who was grading those projects. But that's even more practical than the test.
Linda?
Well, look, we can all say we like the British model, and I think it's a good model. This is a model in which teams of people come in and do these rigorous in-person inspections of schools, and you know, it probably would cost billions of dollars to do it here. But yet we're moving more and more toward emphasis on test scores, not less. The Obama administration and the Arne Duncan Education Department are putting more emphasis on the quantitative measure of state test scores, mm-hmm. not less. And so the question to me comes to, do these tests really test what we want children to know? Do they tell us everything we need to know about children? When you have, like Khalilah said, a fifth grader taking a fifth grade test, but that student is reading on third grade level, maybe that student moved up from first grade to third grade level, reading level, in a year. That's 2 years of progress in 1 year. If they're taking the fourth grade test in fourth grade and fifth grade test in fifth grade, that's not going to show mm-hmm. at all. And so I think we need to start looking at how to make these measures tell us what we really need to know. They're not going away.
For us, too, at the school level, ultimately, parents look at a lot more than testing, mm-hmm. test scores. I mean, they're looking at when people do the detail work on where their kid's going to go to school, they, you know, go visit the school.
And the
culture is a big piece. And you walk through the door and there's a sort of threshold decision on whether the school feels safe and feels like a place where they would want their child to learn. And then visiting the classroom, they mm-hmm. can... those ultimately are the consumer of what we're delivering. Now, a lot of families don't have options. So they can't move to the county. They can't send their kids to private school or parochial school. That's becoming, I think, in this economy, increasingly the case. But ultimately, it's the parents that are going to look at more than test scores. Frankly, some of the education jargon that's used, adequate yearly progress and MSA and HSA and, you know, all of the various terms that come up, people, you know, I find that the best compliment Hampstead Hill can receive is when I hear parents talking on the playground or in the neighborhood and they're talking to somebody who doesn't attend the school and say, that's a good school. You should go mm-hmm. check that out, because that's... means something. The parents have made a decision, and that's very important.
But yet, people are still going to back to school night and hearing 60% of your child's grade will be based on formative assessments, and 30% will be graded on summative assessments.
They don't hear that at the Baltimore Freedom
yeah,
Academy.
Well, that's
not
good
Hampstead
because
Hill
there's you know there are schools at which the vast majority of the time is spent talking about how they'll be assessed.
Well, I have to give some credit to the CEO here in Baltimore City in wanting to open some more innovative models of schools where people are exploring different approaches to assessing students. Again, at the Baltimore Freedom Academy, we do assessment based on standards and mastery of content and information. We don't put numbers on report cards, so that's not a focus for children. They're not asking us, how do I go from 69 to 70 or 59 to 60? Instead, they want to know, how do I meet this standard? What else do I need to know? What am I not doing correctly? And so we need more forums for educators to be able to talk about some best practices that allow for genuine and authentic assessment as well as assessment for learning, so that the assessment is informing the learning.
But at the end of the day, you're still going to be judged by the state and the federal government and the city on, and your charter authorizers on that.
Absolutely. So the question is, how do we establish assessments that are more adaptive and show more about a student's progress and ability to do things that actually allow them to live in this society outside of the four walls of the building?
So in this book, and let me go to the phones, get a couple of callers in here, I want to talk about what came at the end of this article, which was whether we may be going to, which is kind of, we're afraid to say in this country, national standards, but we're not afraid to talk about nationwide standards. All this in this little silly nomenclature game we play in politics. But there clearly are states around the country are talking about trying to create an assessment tool of some kind that gives you a standard nationally. But Linda's shaking her head. I'm going to come to Linda after this call at 410-319-8888. James, you're on the air. James, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you today?
Well.
I'm one of those people you talked about just early, you know, that didn't get that education for all those reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I wish we'd have had and could do right now, the city has 20,000 houses out there. And I've been trying as a community organizer for the last 15 years to get them to train kids in those houses. Now, what I keep running into is they're insured when they're in school, but the city's property, the city won't install. They can learn electrician, carpentry, any trade that you can imagine can be learned in those houses. We have 20,000 houses. And we're being blocked from kids getting an education that can't go to a regular school or trade school, but they're already there. And, you know, that's what I can't understand. But we put the PAL thing, and we keep stressing recreation. Every time they talk about black kids, they talk about they don't have nowhere to go and have recreation. But Tiger Woods didn't say that. He went in the neighborhoods like that and asked the kids what they wanted to do, and that's what he put in those neighborhoods for them to learn how to do something. But when they had the PAL, they had all those places with police that make at least $50,000, six or seven of them in each place.
Right.
It was a place to learn how to play.
I know you make a very strong point. I think you make a strong point because I think that's part of the reason some schools in this city are talking about why they want to go to also an all-day model, which is not putting kids in the streets as recreation centers, but having them in programs from 7 in the morning to 6 at night.
People who know them.
With people who know them.
Mm-hmm. People who know them, people who understand what their challenges are.
I mean, if your child goes to a private school in Baltimore City or Baltimore County or Anne Arundel County, anywhere in this region, if they go to a private school, they get there like 7:30 in the morning, and they don't come home because they have other things to do. When the classes close down at 2:30, they're there almost 6 o'clock in the evening when the parents go pick them up because they're in sports, they're in some extra kind of science activity, they're in something that keeps people involved all day.
Yeah, there are community schools that do similar things, and the Beacon School model in New York City is terrific, where they make it more available on weekends and evenings, and it's really the place to be.
I want to come back to the end of the article here, where when the article was talking about the kind of testing movement going on in America, where it's changing under Duncan and Obama, and when I mentioned that comment, Linda kind of turned, let me turn to Linda first.
No, we are actually, there is in progress formulation of a set of national standards that states are signing on to. What I was shaking my head for was you said national assessment. There's not going to be a national test. I think that it's too politically unpalatable to tell states this is the test you have to give children. I don't understand that opposition. But
I think it could be voluntary. I mean, some think tanks like the Aspen Institute or others have some state superintendents thinking that and talking about that possibility, and in a way that it hasn't talked, you know, in a serious way before this time.
I don't know the value of that. I think we have a national test, and it's called the SAT. And I don't think having a national test is going to get us any farther. People feel like there are a myriad of biases in the SAT. So why institute an SAT-type test in lower grades? It's not going to get us any farther along to knowing whether or not students can critically analyze and apply information that they know, rely on their own common senses. You know, when you think about someone like James, there are students who aren't necessarily going to college, but if they don't know how to think for themselves, if they're only being taught to memorize data and parrot it back at people, these tests can keep being given, and people can do a national test. It's not going to get us any further into
I think the countries, the one issue is the countries that do so well in the international standards and are actually garnering the bulk of the PhDs in hard sciences provided in the U.S., the citizens from other countries that are getting that education here, they're succeeding with these kinds of standards, at least in math and science, and measured by, you know, Singapore has a nationwide test that mm-hmm. measures whether or not the standards are being met. Now, I don't want to say Singapore or England have some, mm-hmm. you know, rosy perfected system, but it certainly is more thoughtful than what we have going on
so
here.
So what are we looking for here? I mean, in other words, we take these tests. We have the Notes Are Left Behind, and you know, all the testing that created. We have the HSAs, that's the high school assessment, right? And then we fudged on that even by saying, okay, if a student can't make the HSAs, well, they can complete a project so they can graduate. Well, to me, that just said they don't really mean much, and you're not doing very much with this. It's an excuse to get a kid out of school and saying, oh, well, they passed, so we'll make this a project that you can pass. If you can't figure out an algebraic formula, well, then no, just make this project and you can get your high school diploma. So, I mean, what are we trying to do here as educators, as people who work in education and study education? What should these tests be doing? And what do you expect the leaders who are creating the next test to come about to do?
It needs some major growth. I mean, Kalila talking about the adaptive testing, and it needs to be useful to teachers. I mean, right now it's not useful to teachers, and it doesn't measure growth. And so if we did those two things and measured more content areas, right. You know, I'm not...
The New York model, having regents or...
Okay,
you
right.
know, something that is a lot more rigorous. And I also say, yeah, I'd also say that maybe there being national benchmarks as opposed to a national test that show preparedness, so that we are moving towards these benchmarks that say, you know, if students are able to grapple with this data and show evidence that they're able to comprehend it, that they are likely to be more successful in college, or more successful to work on teams, or more successful to be a collaborative member of an organization or a corporation or a local business or an entrepreneur. You know, national standards, national testing isn't necessarily what I am a fan of, but definitely some benchmarks that, you know, very smart people across this country can potentially come up with.
When you used to be able to learn the law, you didn't necessarily have to go to law school. You
right.
could
mm-hmm.
apprentice, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. there's that quality of real life mm-hmm. Experience in someone who can pass on knowledge and learning in a way that is useful.
But in this world of accountability,
yeah,
how do we ensure the public education is accountable to the parents and to the students for the work being taught and for our children's future? But what tests that?
Some of it's public driven. I mean, everyone likes things ranked. You know,
to me, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't care, you know, so much as how our kids rank against Singapore, is how much we're actually teaching our kids
absolutely.
And what they're accomplishing for this
yeah.
country.
Absolutely.
And
I don't feel like there should be no tests. I just think what we have, what you just said, is a perfect example. If the standard was the HSA, and then you recognize, whoa, not enough people have passed the HSA, let's give them another way around that, then what exactly is your standard? So if it's going to be the HSA, let it be the HSA and allow us to really assess whether or not schools have moved students towards passing those standards. And if not, then you go back to the drawing board. But it was undercut before it really went into full implementation.
I think, you know, when we talk about accountability, we're generally talking about teachers and school systems. We're not talking about accountability for children.
No.
At least
right.
not in Maryland, because the HSA is the only test you sort of have to take to move on in life. And obviously, as we've seen, that doesn't create a great barrier either, because I think only 11 students didn't get their diplomas last year in the whole state because of not passing the HSA.
Which is ridiculous.
But I think we need to talk about.
Be?
I know. And believe me, a big chunk of the kids that are going right into college are going to go straight into remedial classes.
And that's what they do. That's what the ABLE, as we put in this article, the ABLE Foundation study showed that numbers of students that we graduate in Baltimore City and Baltimore County who end up in remedial math and reading.
It's a problem around the country. But I do think we can talk more sophisticatedly about accountability for teachers. Right now the debate is sort of divided into black and white. Like, you know, pay teachers and judge them based on their students' test scores, or continue to do things the way they are now, which is teachers get paid on a set scale and
based on experience
and maybe getting a master's degree.
But
there's something in between, which is you know, in my sort of imagined world, we don't have tenure for school teachers, and we do judge them on their work. But we allow some subjective judgment in there about, because everyone knows who good teachers and bad teachers are. But that's
maybe it's my age showing. But I mean, I remember when we took tests in school. Well, there was elementary school tests, junior high school. I was all in. I went to junior high, not middle school. Junior high school, or when I took the SATs to get into college. We weren't assessing how good the teachers were. We were assessing what we learned and how good we were as students.
That's the debate has shifted completely.
Well,
the debate has totally shifted, and the people in charge now say, you know, it's all about the school. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter, you know, it's all on the school right now. And so that's a sort of controversial notion.
And in some respects, most issues that come up, if there's challenges in a school, are really problems that adults have organizing themselves. They're not kid problems. Mm-hmm. As Dr. Alonzo, I'm sure Khalil has heard him say, that the kids come as they are.
That's right.
And that it's the adults that need to figure out ways to organize, to teach the kids. And so I think it's, if we're going to have a unit of measurement, I think that either groups of teachers, teams of teachers, or the school seems like that's a more appropriate measure than...
And we say that, but kids come to our schools unprepared.
Well, sure. I think what you said, Linda, is right on target. That is this about accountability for teachers or accountability to children? I think maybe employing some standards where assessments from family are a part of how a teacher is judged or a school is judged for being a successful school.
There's a survey. We do that survey.
Which
is going to be part of possibly a new accountability system.
For schools, right. I think also that there are so many issues that children come with that the accountability is beyond public education. It is all of us, and I think in many ways these tests are used to put up a curtain, so to speak, around what the real issue is. And you can't expect, and this is the issue that teachers often have, you can't expect me to solve the social ills that are going on outside of this building. I cannot fix everything, which is correct. But we allow these tests to say, you know, subjectively, this child who may have come from so many different barriers to being able to get information is never going to be able to, in this situation, be successful. So then when do we start bringing in social workers into school? When do we start extending the school day? Other things need to come into play if we're really holding people accountable for children.
Well, supports for kids, if you're going to have an accountability system, you got to have the supports in place.
Right.
It can't come after the accountability system.
Right, right.
Let me get another call in here before we have to kind of move on to our next subject area, but I promise we'll have some of these folks back in the next week or so to really kind of give us an entire hour or more to talk about this, because these are our children and the future of the society we're talking about. This is, I think, one of those critical discussions we can have. 410-319-8888. Erin, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for such a great discussion, first of all. While I was on hold, there's so many comments that I have.
Go ahead.
But first of all, I just wondered how many of the panel use pre-assessment, because I didn't really hear that. And then also, I think maybe if there's some sort of way that schools are using the data more strategically.
Sorry, Erin, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
We use the Maryland measures of academic progress so that we actually get some pretty detailed information from the Northwest Education Association assessment. And then we're doing, we actually review data weekly at school, qualitative and quantitative data, and a team of teachers and administrators and folks sit around a table on Mondays and look at the previous week's data. And so we're able to not sort of take a glance at it once a year or twice a year, but we're looking at it very closely weekly. All teachers turn in this qualitative and quantitative data on Fridays, and it's definitely a part of the culture at Hampstead Hill. Kalila?
Likewise, we used the MAP assessment in the last year, and we have continued to use the Scholastic Reading Inventory. And we use that data. Faculty use the disaggregated information to inform how to make sure they're using differentiated instruction, not to use jargon, but approaching different learners where they are in the classroom and allowing them to support one another. So we are constantly looking at data. Assessment is ongoing. Teacher-created assessment, likewise, is also used on a regular basis.
But it's useful for us at the school level. It's not, right. We're not just
the
doing
the district
it.
Doesn't want to know.
But yeah. This isn't typical. What these two are talking about doesn't happen everywhere. And
Linda,
you know,
may have a broader perspective.
In a culture where, you know, the idea of teachers sort of working together to figure out what's working best and what's going on with individual children and what to try. You know, when Dr. Alonzo came to town and tried to tell teachers that they were going to have to spend just one of their planning periods every week working with each other, there was such a backlash.
But that, I mean, in all fairness to the teachers, that was the leaders of the Baltimore Teachers Union talking for the teachers. That is that most teachers didn't agree with that.
I mean, but
well,
even that we had to have this conversation.
Regardless of, I mean, the union issue is separate.
But there's no, people on the outside don't realize that there's very little, if any, in many schools, formal place or time that teachers work together.
Well, so
in a typical school.
So this gives me the hope. See, I have a huge amount of hope for the first time in my 17 years of being on the air almost, in my more than 30 years of being involved in education on one level or another, that we can actually turn something around in Baltimore City that be a model for schools everywhere. I mean, what they should be doing, really, rather than worrying about which test we're going to take, is to listen to the principals of these new schools about how they think they should be tested and how they should be held accountable and build models around that.
Talking to schools, yeah.
Yeah, and I think our president has it right. If you offer more opportunity for innovative educational models, you know, you do have two charter schools sitting at the table. So, Linda, what you say is not too off base. We doggedly tell people we don't care what they think about what we're doing, that we're going to try different ways to meet students where they are and try to move them towards readiness for life after Baltimore Freedom Academy. So more opportunities for there to be schools, to have schools that try other best practices is also something critical.
Well, I'll tell you what, I knew this was going to happen because calls are flooding in now, and this is one of these days we have three subjects in 2 hours, which is a shame on one level. Another, we have to get some things in here to talk about. So I'd encourage maybe the three of you to come back in at least next week or two, to have a much longer discussion with the citizens and maybe kind of call out some education leaders to join us for a roundtable on this, because I think that it deserves it. And this is one of the reasons I think the Urbanite magazine is so important in our community, because it generates discussions like this that other journals aren't doing anymore. It's a great edition. And this has been one of our Urbanite radio stories. And I think that, because we don't have time for any callers right now, we can't take them unless they were about to take a break. But I do want to come back to this. I think we have callers who want to talk about the state of schools right now, and other callers calling in to defend private school teachers. And I want to hear I'd love to hear what they had to say, and encourage maybe to write Mark, M-A-R-C, B as in Ben, Steiner, S-T-E-I-N-E-R, @gmail.com, or go to the Facebook page and throw your comments there. And we'll use those to kind of create a larger discussion in our next go-round as we look at this, because I think that it is a very critical issue and one that we have to get our hands around if we're going to turn our schools around. And it's always a pleasure to have two of our leading educational lights in town, Kalila Harris and Matthew Hornbeck, and a pleasure to see Linda Perlstein again. And your book, Create a Great Deal of Discussion, was a great book to read, and so I want to thank all three of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
And we'll have them all back here very soon. I think this discussion really has to kind of take off in a major way. and hear all of your thoughts on it. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information on personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Before we go to break, I wanted to say we're breaking news from Charles Robinson on Facebook that he sent to our Facebook page, that Zena Pierre, who won the Democratic primary in Annapolis just 20 minutes ago, jumped out of the race saying she had bounced checks, failed to pay back taxes, our house on the verge of foreclosure. She admitted to everything, left the race, which says we have still in this world of gotcha politics rather than politics of substance, which is a pity. So we may use that for subject for another day. I just want to let you all know the latest breaking news from Charles Robinson on Facebook and our Facebook page, which you can log on and check out for yourself. We'll be right back. Stay with us as we talk about a different way of looking at the world and our relationship to it and our world economy. It's very interesting. Not that's usually here, so stay with us.